Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. Thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Boston Christopher. Today we chat with Professor Ida Burge from the University of Alaska Native Arts Language and Studies Program about her work and the upcoming Gathering of the Drums event this Friday. The Juno Piano Series is back this Friday at the Jack with a program of Shostakovich. We talk about how this program came about and what to expect. It's Earth Day today, and it's a perfect time to welcome in Steve Kosis from the Marie Drake Planetarium to preview this Friday's event, Climate Change, Venus, Earth, Mars, which will be presented at the Marie Drake Planetarium this Friday, April 24th at 7 p.m. And Becca Parks from the Juno Chamber of Commerce visits with some updates to Spirits in Alaska this Saturday night, April 25th. Those happenings are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. You can also catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin katka ke jin talk anakaya ha anikuk gunish cheese.
Two programming notes for you quickly. Last night I was over at the Gold Town Nick watching the premiere of Scott Burton's Earnest Drinker, a film about our relationships with alcohol. If you weren't able to make it down to the Gold Town last night, you can also tune in last Friday to our episode, guest hosted by Andy Klein, who talked with Scott about the film. But KTO 360 TV will be showing the film this week. It premieres tomorrow night, Thursday, and it's going to be at 9 p.m. this Thursday. It'll also be at 5 p.m. on Saturday and 7 p.m. on Sunday. You can go to earnestdrinker.com to get more details about the film and when it will be showing. Also, tomorrow, Thursday, you can tune in for a special Songwriters on Songwriters re-air featuring Taylor Dallas Vidic and composer-collaborator Spencer Edgars. They're going to be sharing stories and songs from Taylor's debut album, Cat and Mouse, which fully releases this Friday, April 24th. Here is the latest single from that album, Falling Out of Love, right here on Juno Afternoon.
Falling out of love with you was never easy to do. Pretending every day, saying I'm okay to be alone. They tell you it takes time. To remember who you used to be, remember how to sit in the quiet on your own. And these days I want
Dallas Vidic on Juno Afternoon. You are listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at kto.org. Also streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the Instagrams. We're all over the place. This Friday, the Indigenous Studies program at UAS has two events, a Northwest Coast Student Art Showcase and a celebration of the Native and Rural Student Center's 30th anniversary, a Gathering of the Drums. I am joined in the studio now by Professor Ida Burge. Gunath Chi, Sha'igudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasiati, how are you today?
Kunachik, A. Boston. How are you?
I am very well. I'm very well. It's good to be back. I was out last week and Folk Fest happened,
sure,
and now we're
yeah.
sort of getting back into the spring routine, and it's
it
sunny
might actually
out.
Finally be spring.
It might actually be spring. The sun is sort of trying to shine,
and considering it,
snow is melting and all that stuff. So you are a professor out at the University of Alaska Southeast, and this program has been growing and growing and growing. The Indigenous Study Program seems to have been really flourishing over the last decade, especially.
Yeah.
And there's some potential new programs coming,
yeah.
and there's different agreements. There's MOAs being signed with different organizations.
Yeah.
And so tell me a little bit about overall the Indigenous Studies program out there at UAS.
Yeah. Well, so we've got five programs now, which
wow.
is pretty exciting. We've got a bachelor's in Indigenous Studies with three different tracks, so you can focus on Indigenous languages. We teach three Alaska Native languages currently at the university, Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian, so you can focus on any of those three languages. You can focus on Indigenous governance as a bachelor's student, or you can focus on Northwest Coast Art. We've also got an occupational endorsement in Northwest Coast Art, as well as an AA, so an associate's degree that takes about 2 years. Northwest Coast Art focused. And then we've got two Indigenous language certificates, one that focuses on Indigenous language teaching. So if folks are interested in becoming a teacher in the school district or in their community, or if folks are interested in learning, just focusing on language, we have an Indigenous language speaking certificate, again, for Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian. So we've got a lot of options.
That's a lot. There's
yes.
a lot going on
yes.
there. And, of course, you can go to the uas.alaska.edu yeah. and just search Indigenous Studies, and the whole program will come up with all these different options and stuff. But one thing that we've mentioned here on the show a bunch of times is that the classes are – some of the classes are made available to the public at no charge.
Yes. So any of our Alaska Native Language classes are free to take, so long as you don't want college credit. So if you don't need the credit and you're just interested in learning, you can sign up for what's called our AKLA section of that class, and you'll be in class with our four credit students who are earning degree programs through the university. But you can learn the Indigenous languages of this place entirely for free.
That is, I think that's amazing. I mean, I think we've had Hune on the show before, and, you know, I think the phrase he always says is you shouldn't be charged to learn
yeah.
your language, right? So that's kind of cool. So what are you teaching in this? All of these options of these programs, what do you actually
what
teach?
What do I do?
What do you do?
I'm the Indigenous Studies Program Coordinator right now. Kone is on sabbatical. I also teach in our Tlingit language program. So I'm an Indigenous language, Tlingit language teacher. And Kone and I split the sort of lecture theory, Indigenous language revitalization class kind of in half. So he teaches half of those classes and I teach the other half. So I am the language. I'm one of the language components in our sort of three-pillar approach to Indigenous Studies.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you come to learning the language? Was it something that you grew up with, or did it something that you came around to saying, hey, I want to learn my language?
Yeah. So I'm not actually from here. I grew up down south, moved around quite a bit. The Southwest, if there's a place in the Southwest, I've probably lived there. I moved to Juneau in 2010 and started attending the University of Alaska Southeast as an undergrad. Really fell in love with the place, fell in love with the people, was always really interested in culture and community and language. And it was Colleen James, the director for the Native and Rural Student Center, who really said, if you want to learn about culture, you have to learn language. And so I started, I took Hune's first class that he taught at UAS in 2011 in that fall, and have just been learning ever since. Got my degree. I think I was the second cohort to get the BLA in Alaskan Native Languages and Studies. Graduated from UAS, went off, got a couple more degrees, came back, and now I teach at the university.
Oh, that's amazing. So where did you grow up, I guess?
Yeah, so I was born in Dallas, Dallas, Texas. I lived there for about 2 years. We moved to New Mexico. I lived there for about a year. I spent a lot of time in Arizona, all over the place in Arizona. And then I moved when I was about 17 to Southern California, where I graduated high school. But I had moved so much by the time I graduated high school that I wasn't a resident of any state. Like, I wasn't getting in-state tuition regardless of where I went, and had spent my entire life in the desert and was a bit done with that particular climate, and thought, oh, Alaska is about as different from the desert as you can get. So here I am.
Absolutely. So are you fluent in all three of the languages, or where are you at with your language journey?
Yeah, I would say I'm high intermediate. I know a lot about the language, but I'm still certainly working on my own conversational fluency and just being more comfortable speaking in the language for long periods of time. I understand quite a bit. But there, I think, like many folks, there's this sort of block to speaking. You can know a lot, and I can respond in English pretty easily, but then the speaking, anyways. Mm-hmm. So high intermediate for Tlingit. For Haida and Tsimshian, I'm very much a beginner. I can say really, really basic things, but I'm always open to learning.
And what was the impetus for you to, I mean, I guess it was Colleen you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So she said, if you want to learn about this place, you have to learn the language. And then what was that first, you just took Hune's class and then said, okay, this is the thing for me?
Yeah, I mean, it was, kind of a mix of quite a few things. Like, I kind of got brought into this really strong indigenous community. A lot of my friends were learning. I was adopted by Koneoti Marsha Hotch, Kanakhiri from Klakwan, Alaska, and so then I have this mom, and it really became both like an ethical implication that I live here. I want to spend my life here. Like, my community is here. I should know the language of the place. And then being brought into the community and being asked to continue to learn, and then graduating and sort of being asked to get these degrees to come back and help support the language revitalization community. Like, it was all of these things that, and it just ended up being something that I really love to do. Like, I love language. It was, yeah, all these multi-factors of, I live here, I should speak the language of this place. There's these people now that have brought me into their family that sort of expect this of me, and to sort of support this movement. And this is something that I feel like I could do, and was able to sort of, it all kind of fell into place after that. Yeah.
That's excellent. That's really cool. So you mentioned the Native and Rural Student Center. Can't believe it's 30 years old. It's 30th anniversary.
Pretty cool.
And so this Friday, there's going to be something called Gathering of the Drums. Can you tell us a little bit about this event?
Yeah. So in celebration of the NRSC's 30th anniversary, we have over the years hosted events, what we call Gathering of the Drums, where we bring a bunch of people, we let people drum, and we do some drum routines and sort of really celebrate our community, the fact that the weather is changing, the fact that the NRSC is 30 years old. There'll be snacks, there'll be a fire. It's just a really good time.
Okay. And this is going to happen at the Noise Pavilion. It's going to be Friday from 6 to 9:15. I mean, you say right on the flyer here, fry bread and taco fixings available. I mean, that's going to get people there just automatically,
food.
Right?
Food. Although certainly dress for the weather. We don't know what it's going to be like.
Yeah, who knows what it's going to be like on Friday. Let's just keep hoping that spring comes along. And there's another event that you have as well happening this Friday, the Northwest Coast Student Art Showcase. Now, you're not teaching in the art program, but it's all part of the Indigenous Studies program. So tell me a little bit about this Northwest Coast Student Art Showcase.
Yeah, so the students in the Northwest Coast Art Program, typically at the end of the year, will showcase their art from the year. So we'll have students who've completed their projects. There'll be paddles. There'll be carved. Whatever their focus for this year, their projects will be, they'll be on display and there to sort of talk a little bit about their work. So the showcase kind of leads in, I think, really nicely to the event at The Noise. So if you want to come take a look at some Northwest Coast art, connect with some of our art students and our art instructors, and then head on to the pavilion to do some drumming.
Get some fry bread as well. That student showcase is going to be in Egan 223 from 4 to 7. So there's definitely a crossover there.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of a crossover. So here's a question for you. If you live in this place, which many of us do who are listening, there is certain phrases that become, you know, sort of, you know, a lot of people are saying Grundtvig these days, things like that. What are some of the tips that you might give someone who says, hey, I want to get into this a little bit. I want to figure out, maybe I don't want to be fluent, but maybe I want to learn like place names, or I want to learn a phrase or two so that when someone I'm in passing seeing somebody, I could say, you know, how are you doing, you know, kind of thing. What's a good tip for somebody who might want to start?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we have a lot of resources that are posted online for free that folks can check out. I know Rene, his YouTube page goes through the pronunciation. You can sort of play the recordings back over and over. There's fluent speakers who are recorded and posted on YouTube if you want to just take a listen to what those elders, their cadence and their intonation and how that works. Some of those videos have transcripts and translations. Others don't, so you can kind of practice that way. The Downhauer work, of course, they have their phrase book. You can go pick up a phrase book and take a look at some of those basic introductory phrases. Same with the Beginning Tlingit workbook. That chapter 0, chapter 1 talks about coming and going and greetings. So there's a lot of resources out there. Of course, you can take a class for free or for
credit.
For
free at the university.
If you want to. I also know that TNH, sometimes there's like during the lunch hour, there'll be sort of drop-in community classes that happen for Tlingit and Chadkil and Shmayich as well. So there are certainly options for, I've only got a time for like an hour a week. I've got a couple of hours a week that I can dedicate to this. I just want to study on my own. Like there's a bunch of different paths you can take, particularly if you're just kind of interested in getting started.
And there's also, I think, Hune has the, or all of you contribute to it, I think, but the tlingitlanguage.com is a great place to start as well. What's the number, not number one, but what's a myth that maybe you think that when people come to class, like that they first say, oh, I X, Y, Z, I can't learn it because of this. What's one thing that might stop people?
I feel like a lot of folks say, oh, I'm of this age, I'm never going to be able to learn. And I think that is just not true. Language learning can be difficult, can be challenging, absolutely, for anybody, particularly adults. But it's certainly possible. People do it all the time. I think there's this sort of assumption that because Tlingit and a lot of our Alaska Native languages sound so different from English, most people, right, are coming from an English, maybe a monolingual English background, like because it's so different that it's sort of impossible, or you're not able to get far. And I think that's just not true. There's a lot of, again, there's a lot
of
barriers. How
do you say poppycock in Tlingit?
That's a good question.
Or
I'll ask and get back to you. But yeah, I think anybody can do it.
Yeah. Because I think it's some of the sounds that people make that you hear, you go, oh, my mouth can't make that sound.
Absolutely, you can.
But I also love that one thing that I know on my small language journey that I'm making is people are very forgiving, you know, and you're learning as you go, and you might make a mistake. You can't be afraid to make mistakes.
Yeah.
Because I think that the overall sense is that people, especially Tlingit people here in the Southeast, are excited that people are learning the language. And many folks are also reclaiming it for themselves because it was taken away and all that history. So it's sort of becoming something that we can all kind of do and share together as we move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think the goal, right, of language revitalization, language reclamation, is to be able to use your language or languages everywhere you go all the time. And in order to do that, you need to be able to talk with both Indigenous and non-Indigenous people in that language, like we live in this space, you should be able to go shopping in Tlingit or Haida or Tsimshian. You should be able to converse with your cashier or the person getting gat. Like all of these things, we need as a community, everyone to kind of connect in that way. And I think one way of doing that is just to start.
Take a free class.
Take a free class.
Go to these events on Friday, the Northwest Coast Student Art Showcase from 4 to 7 in Egan 223. Also, the Gathering of the Drums celebrating the Native and Rural Student Center's 30th anniversary from 6 to 9:15 at the Noise Pavilion. I love 9:15 as a cutoff.
I'm not quite sure what the...
There's some significance there.
Something's happening there.
Go and ask. Yeah. Go find out. Why does this end at 9:15? And you can also find out more about the language program by just going to uas.alaska.edu and searching an Indigenous Studies program or Indigenous Studies, and I'm sure you'll get to the right webpage for all of that stuff out there.
Yeah.
Professor Ida, thank you so much for joining us today.
Gunathjish.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's a little Shostakovich getting ready for our next guest from the Juno Piano Series. This is Juno Afternoon. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That's a little Shostakovich, the piano quintet in G minor, Opus 57. Is that how you say that? Yeah, okay. I was just curious how you say that, Todd, in terms of like, when you see the OP period, for those of us not schooled, that does mean opus, right?
Opus. Yes.
Opus. Okay, so that's Opus 57. And I have the Juno Piano Series in the house with me. They and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council are presenting a chamber music concert this Friday, April 24th at 7 p.m. at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. And on the docket is a program of Shostakovich. And I'm in the studio now, joined by John Hayes. Welcome back, Gunathjish. John, how are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks so much for having us.
Excellent. And I also have W. Todd Hunt in the house. Yes. Welcome in, Todd.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
Thanks so much. And then a new guest for us. Let me see if I can get this. Jamila Hulishway.
Yes.
Pretty close?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
And you are from, you're down from Fairbanks.
I'm not from Fairbanks, but I've lived there for a long time now, so.
Yeah, you were born and raised in Prague.
I was born and raised in Prague. My mother is Czech, but my father is actually Indian Burmese, and that's why my name is so strange.
Oh, okay.
Everybody asks me about that, so I'm just going to say it.
They're like, wait, Burmese. Is this Czechoslovakian in some way? And you're like, well, not really.
No, it's a Burmese surname, and I actually, just a side note, right now, like very recently, I met two Burmese people that live here in Juneau, which is very rare.
Hey, that's
there's like
cool.
Nobody in Fairbanks besides me.
Did they recognize like from your name?
I recognized one of them online. I was browsing somewhere and I saw a name and Juneau, so I contacted her.
Oh.
And then there's another one.
Okay, wow. That's really cool. Well, it's
so it's
really
nice to share some culture, you know, like background and food background, especially.
For sure.
Good
for
food.
Sure.
The food.
Well, Gunnath Cheese, for being here, all of you. John, I know you always bring interesting people down or from somewhere for the Juneau Piano Series. And so, first, I want to establish, like, what's this connection between you and Jamila here?
Well, we met, I think, first time in 2017, working as rehearsal pianists for opera premiere, The Princess Sophia, way back then. So yeah, I met Jamila there working as accompanist, which Todd Hunt was conducting whole opera.
That big project.
That's how I met Jamila. I think you've been coming to Juneau longer than that.
A little bit longer.
Yeah, probably 20.
Oh, so you two knew each other.
So he brought me down in 2015 for production of The Cunning Little Vixen by Janáček, because it's a Czech opera doing it in Czech. So I was coaching the Czech diction and being the rehearsal pianist and being the orchestra pianist.
Okay.
And so that was our first working together, and it was just fantastic. I had such a great time.
Yep.
And I was so glad to be called back to do Don Giovanni.
Yeah,
and
Don Giovanni.
Princess Sophia, and then we did another concert 2 years ago, and last year we did a Messiaen, Quartet for the End of Times, and then now we're doing Shostakovich. So I just
And what do you do up in Fairbanks?
I teach privately. I coach. I travel and work for opera companies.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Yeah, that's so interesting to have such talented musicians like based in Fairbanks. Because I know you've brought other folks down from Fairbanks too before.
I like to try and have Alaskan musicians when possible.
Yeah, that's great. Know. So, okay, Shostakovich, how did we get here?
Well, this is Jamila's idea. So,
okay, if you tell me, Jamila.
Well, so, pianists can get lonely, right? We sit at the piano all the time by ourselves. We don't have orchestra rehearsals to go to. We don't have the quartets and chamber orchestras and, you know, bands. So, it's wonderful to play with other musicians that are great. And these are really, this is a group of just fantastic people that I've played, like I said before, in the past years. And they're, you know, the great talent, like as good as it gets. And not just that, but they are just wonderful people too. So that's really important too. You know, when you are working on something that intense, that you like each other.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, so that's been just great. And of course, it's not a traditional instrumentation for the thing that we are doing, just because we don't have. In this group, that Dorgos kind of instrument, so.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Todd, you orchestrate, you arranged, I should say.
Yeah, we arranged the piece. It was originally for a string quartet, two violins, viola and cello.
Okay.
We were doing this with a flute, clarinet, violin slash viola, and cello.
I see. Okay. So, Jamila, did you just wake up in the middle of the night one night and be like, Shostakovich? Like, how did you get to wanting to do this project?
Well, it's like in my head, I'm always thinking of some project to come down here to play with them, to come up with some kind of excuse.
I see.
And it's Shostakovich's 120 years from the year of his birth. So I thought that's a good year to do it.
Okay.
I have played this quintet when I was very young. And so I thought that we should do that. I mean, we had such a good time doing the Messiaen that I thought we should just do more stuff like
this. Is this piano quintet, what's the biggest challenge in this quintet?
Well, I could speak to having... you know, playing this arrangement.
Right, okay.
Because, you know, we've got, you know, well, two instruments that weren't there to begin with at all that are covering parts that weren't for those instruments and making the blend work, making the lines come out, like the balance in between lines and everything. That's, I mean, that's been a challenge.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, interesting. Because you said, I mean, just, I thought of that because you said you hadn't played it since you were young. So I thought, is it one of those things that you go, I have to go back to the mountain and play that great piece that I played when I was young?
It wasn't like that, but the same challenges I recognize from back then, and that is actually, we are also doing a for his first trio, so I just want to point out a little bit about how the piano part is for the first trio, which is very pianistically different than the piano part in the quintet. In the trio, it's very early work, he was very young, and it's very romantic, you know, chords, it's very sometimes lush, really, really beautiful, lyrical, even impressionistic. Here and there, like the future Shostakovich kind of pops out here and there, but it's different. And in the quintet, it's very different. It's much more austere, the part, piano part. It's sometimes just single lines, or single line in right hand, single line in left hand, many times in unison. And there are rhythmic patterns or melodic sequences that fit certain way with the rest of the group, with the quartet. And then there's this long, long section of those sequences, and all of a sudden in the middle of that, he like moves it by a beat, and it just messes up everybody. it's so strange. And so that's really, I think that's the most, for me at least, most difficult part was not to play the notes. They are not that, it's not like technically difficult to play it.
Right.
But to play it as an ensemble, to get it and not panic.
Right. And so are you playing the whole quintet on Friday? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a big piece, right?
Yep.
It's about 40 minutes or so?
Yeah, and actually I just wrote some interesting things about it. It was immensely popular right away when he wrote it.
Yeah.
Right away.
Oh, it sounds fantastic.
Well, the thing is that they had to do encore, sometimes the entire quintet as an encore in the evening. They usually did like two or three movements, but sometimes they had to do the whole thing. And so there was a kind of a joke running that this is a quintet, a piano quintet of five movements that has seven movements. Because
because you're going to be called to do it again. It's like, do the whole thing again.
Yeah.
So, John, is that the program? Is this whole piano quintet, or is there more in the program?
Well, I think, there's opening with the first piano trio.
Oh, right. That's right. Jamila mentioned
actually,
that.
Well, actually, it opens with the five pieces.
Oh, five pieces.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
So okay. So there's there's five pieces for two violins and piano that Shostakovich wrote, which was arranged by someone else, but then I rearranged it for flute and clarinet and piano.
Oh, okay.
So that'll,
okay.
Yeah, that'll open the program.
Right.
And
okay.
Then we have the first trio.
The trio, and then you'll play the quintet.
Then the quintet.
Okay, great. What a wonderful program that's going to be.
Yeah.
You will have like three flavors of Shostakovich that are very different from each other. Really.
Oh, that's really fun, too, to sort of see what
so
a composer.
So one composer, but still a very varied program.
Yeah, a bit different.
Yeah, the five pieces are light and kind of happy. Well, not all happy, but they're of very much more
traditional harmonies.
Yeah, like traditional, mostly traditional harmonies, but easy to listen to, fun, light.
Yeah.
I think some of them are pulled from film scores.
There's like film score. It's like the five pieces are from film scores, and there's a ballet and the jazz suite.
That's amazing. That's going to be great. Mm-hmm. That's really fun. So that's this Friday, April 24th, 7 p.m. over at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. You can go to jahc.org to get tickets or show up at the door, I'm assuming. And then, John, is there more coming this spring from the piano series?
There should be, yeah. There's should be three more concerts in June.
And some more in June.
So a couple
happening.
Months
from
now.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll welcome you back when you get that solidified and figure all that out. And it's just such a fantastic series that you continue to do and to bring in these guests and sort of bless Juno with all of this fantastic music. And Todd gets all these opportunities to arrange and rearrange.
Right.
Yeah, I've been super happy to be doing this for 7 years
now.
Yeah,
it's been a long while.
You know, the Arts Council has been a huge help being the financial umbrella. So
that's
great. Many, many thanks to them. And the community has been very supportive of me and the project. And
that's fantastic. Yeah. Jamila,
I just want to say one thing that I've been, ever since I came here the first time, very impressed with the music scene in Juneau.
Yeah.
It's very high quality and very adventurous too.
Yeah.
Especially Todd has, you know, he's not afraid of programming things that nobody has heard of. Or, but it's great because, you know, you discover things that you wouldn't otherwise. And,
no, we need people like that.
Like, yeah. I said, it's a, you have talents here of like world class quality. You know?
Yeah.
And
we've probably like sextupled the amount of Shostakovich played in Juneau with one concert in the past 10 years.
Yeah, so. That's probably true.
Well, thank you all for coming in, yeah. Todd, Jamila, and John. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming and telling us about it. You can follow Juneau Piano Series on Facebook. It's the best place to follow and find out about upcoming concerts as well as this concert. I appreciate you all being here today. Yeah. Gonna cheese.
Thanks,
thank
Boston.
You, thank you.
Thank
absolutely.
You.
Let's have a star party. It is Earth Day, after all. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the Goldilocks Zone. The region around a star where a planet may have a surface of liquid water is called the habitable zone or the Goldilocks zone. In our solar system, Venus, Earth, and Mars fit that definition. But currently, Venus is a hellscape with surface temperatures approaching 900 degrees Fahrenheit, enough to melt lead, and Mars is a cold, dry desert with very little atmosphere, while Earth has abundant surface water. So the question is, what happened to Venus and Mars? Well, in the case of Venus, it did have surface water in the past, the distant past. Evidence shows that. However, being closer to the sun, the evaporation rate was greater, and then water evaporated in the air, causing more carbon dioxide, which led to what is called runaway greenhouse gas warming. And additionally, there was a period of very violent volcanism that also added more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. This increased the temperature in a feedback loop, and we have the current hellscape of Venus. In the case of Mars, it is much smaller than the Earth. Its core cooled and could no longer maintain a magnetic field, which caused the solar wind to strip away the atmosphere of Mars. The surface water evaporated, and Mars is in its current cold desert state. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I am your host, Boston Christopher. It's Earth Day today, and I've got Steve Kosas from the Marie Drake Planetarium with me. We learn from Steve often on this show with his feature Star Party, as we just did, about the Goldilocks Zone. And this Friday, April 24th at 7 p.m., the Marie Drake Planetarium is presenting Climate Change, Venus, Earth, Mars, because those are the three planets in our solar system that fit that Goldilocks zone definition, right, Steve? So welcome in. Gunth Chish Wasiti, how are you?
Hey, thanks for having me, Boston. And yeah, not too hot, not too cold. That's what we're talking about in the Goldilocks zone, which is also called the habitable zone. And, you know, that zone varies for each star, depending on the star's temperature and brightness and size. But in our solar system, the three planets, Venus, Earth, and Mars, are in this habitable zone, which means that when conditions are correct, they're in the area to have surface water.
I see. Okay. But you also, in your notes to me, you told me that a lot of the things like Venus is not really, it's really hot, and then Mars is like really cold, and so are we like, is that why we're Goldilocks? The Earth is because we're Goldilocks, we're just right.
We're an oasis in emptiness. We're in the middle of emptiness. And we see on Venus is a hellscape, even though it has surface water in the distant past. And Mars is a hot, cold desert, even though there's lots of evidence on the surface of Mars that it had surface water in the distant past.
Interesting. Okay. Where would we be without water, Steve?
Well, we wouldn't have life as we know it.
Right.
Maybe something like in that movie Project Hail Mary, where we had Rocky as aliens. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But not carbon-based life that we know, because carbon-based life seems to, far as we know, originate in water.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. And today, as we said, is Earth Day. And so what should we be doing today on Earth Day?
Well, actually, there's a theme for the Earth Day 2026. It's our power, our planet.
Okay.
And the whole idea of Earth Day, which started in 1970, was Senator Gaylord Nelson and a student, David Haynes. And it was also based April 22nd, so it would be around spring break to motivate university students to work on helping the Earth, mitigating the Earth, doing maintenance on the Earth to maintain our paradise. And as far as we know, there may be life everywhere, or it could be in the whole universe, we're the only intelligent life in the universe. It's probably one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
There is some evidence now of organic compounds on Mars and possible organic compounds in the atmosphere of Venus. But as far as we know, we're the only intelligent life in the whole universe.
Okay.
Currently.
So far, right?
So far, yeah. Yes.
As we think.
Yes.
So tell me about this event that's happening on Friday. It's at the planetarium at 7 p.m. Climate change, Venus, Earth, Mars. What's going to be going on?
What we're going to do is, using our Digitalis system, we're going to travel to the planets Venus and Mars and look at what climate change they went through to form Venus, the hellscape, and Mars, the dry, cold desert. And these were, as far as we know, natural causes of the climate warming. On Venus, the natural causes on Venus was it was closer to the sun, so it received more solar energy, so it heated more. The surface water started to evaporate, and that put water vapor, more and more water vapor in the atmosphere. And water vapor is one of the greenhouse gases, along with methane and carbon dioxide. And then the surface was hot enough to start releasing more carbon compounds in the atmosphere of Venus. And Venus has no continental drift. So continental drift actually prevents large-scale volcanism. So Venus had this global volcanism. Basically, the whole surface was magma. Mm. And that put more and more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere of Venus. And it's called catastrophic runaway greenhouse gas warming.
Oh, okay, okay.
And this was natural.
Yeah. So we're obviously Earth has its own natural issues, but then also all the man-made stuff, right, that we're doing to the climate that is affecting things.
Yeah, climate change is long-term changes in the atmosphere and the weather, not short-term changes. That's weather. When we, you know, day-to-day temperature change like we're experiencing here in Juneau. Climate change is long-term changes. And what we're seeing is, since the Industrial Revolution in the 19th century, there's been a significant increase in both global temperature of the atmosphere and ocean and the amount of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere.
I guess what I'm wondering is, what can we learn from Venus and Mars that we could use here going forward?
Well, what we can learn is that currently the carbon dioxide percentage in our atmosphere is something like 0.01%.
Okay.
In Venus, the carbon dioxide percentage is 98%.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, it's like three orders of magnitude more, basically. So what we're learning is the boundary conditions of this extreme greenhouse warming.
We're seeing
the upper bounds of what can happen on Venus. And what we learned from Mars, Mars is the way it is now because it was much smaller than the Earth. Its core cooled. Its magnetic field collapsed. Solar winds stripped away Mars's atmosphere, so the surface water evaporated. Now, there's no, and that was natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
The only correlation to the Earth is there's evidence that our magnetic field reverses polarity every like million years. And when it does reverse polarity, it would go through a point where it's zero. Okay. And that could have some effect on solar wind impacting, you know, our atmosphere.
That's amazing. This is all good stuff, man.
And we'll be showing this in a whole digital format, full dome videos that we have with our system.
Yeah, so that is going to be this Friday over at the Marie Drake Planetarium, climate change, Venus, Earth, Mars, what's going on with all that. It's so cool. And you, like you said, you're going to have all the, you're going to have a bunch of images up there and looking at the stars and looking at the planets and all that.
Visualization.
Yeah, visualization. Studio. Which is going to be so cool. And of course, today is Earth Day. Do something good for the planet today.
Yes, the theme for Earth Day 2026 is Our Power, Our Planet, that we all should maybe recycle and reduce.
Reduce, reuse, recycle, all those good things.
The three R's.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Steve Kosas, and appreciate your star party on our show all the time. Really appreciate you being here today. Gonna cheese.
Thanks, Boston.
This is Juno Afternoon.
Dos Fidonia.
Shout out to our Shostakovich performance at the same time as your presentation. Juno is full of stuff, full of choices, Steve. It's wonderful. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. This is this week's Thlinkit Word of the Week.
You're listening to KTOO's Thlinkit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kakwan Ish George Davis. And the word this week is Sheye.
Sheye.
That means spruce. And here's a sentence. He made a basket out of spruce bark. Let's hear it again. Spruce. Gunesh Chish to Khane Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kahuan Ish, George Davis was Dakhdane Tan and the child of a Tsagwe Di man. He grew up in Qiq, Cake, Alaska, and learned to speak well because he would always bring traditional foods to the elders there. As someone who fished a lot and spent time on the land, he knew Thlinkit place names all over the area, and he learned many stories and advanced ways of speaking.
Tune in next week for another Thlinkit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA. Listening to community supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, and we end the day with a quick check-in from Becca Parks from the Juno Chamber of Commerce, who has a big event this weekend, but it's not on Friday.
No, it's not.
It's not competing with all of our other guests.
Oh, we're competing with plenty still.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's the Spirits of Alaska event. It's happening this Saturday, April 25th, up the tram. You can always go to junochamber.com to find out more. But welcome in, Becca Gunathchish. How are you today?
And thanks so much. I'm doing really well.
So also, I want to chat with you. I want to chat about spirits, but also... we're getting into spring, and I believe that we have a first ship coming in next week. So I'm just curious about, you know, checking in with the chamber and our business community and what's going on.
Well, I mean, we're excited about summer. We've got record numbers coming in. Nice little bit late start to the season, but I'm happy the sidewalks are clear and the weather is looking
at least
amazing.
Snow's almost gone.
And I'm excited we're getting two new cruise lines into Juneau this summer. We have MSC and Virgin Voyages, which are both going to be new lines. Okay. I think we've got May 15th and May 17th are their times in port, and just seeing interest in Juno continue to grow. We've got new shops opening up downtown. It's worth, if you haven't been downtown in a while, go walk. Things are getting cleaned up, and it just feels exciting.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'm wondering if the, like the... I just lost my train of thought. That was wild. That was really crazy. That's never happened to me before. I was like, I'm thinking about, that's what you mentioned, the passengers. And I was thinking about, I don't know if you have this or if it's JEDC would have this, but what's the expected number? I mean, I think last year, didn't we like break our record last year?
Yeah, and we're expected not by a lot, but we'll break it again this year. And I am not the right, I don't. Do well with keeping numbers in my head.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I was just wondering if you knew off chance, but because I think last year was like 1.6 or 1.7, something like that. And I'm just like, how many more can we get? But there's a couple of those MOAs that are in place. Yep. With the, I think it's the 16,000 passenger mm-hmm. limit and the five big ships, yep. Right? So, and those are going into effect this year.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's going to be an interesting to see how that impacts it, which one works better. Because I know there's days where, you know, there's seemingly more people downtown than live here. It seems like that.
Yeah. Well, and you look at the schedule and it is a packed summer.
Yeah.
So you just know that that's going to be the reality. And the great part of that is that people are bringing dollars into yeah. Juno and just bringing a love of the place where we live. And that's where we get a lot of our residents and a lot of our new businesses coming in too.
I love the fact that you mentioned that there's new businesses opening downtown as well, because it seems like the small business owner in Juno has a real opportunity yeah. to me, like to sort of really find your niche and like make something happen. Like the one that comes to mind right now, Drip Drop Wonder Shop. Natalie, who opened that store, I think it was Gallery Walk, maybe a year, 2 years, two Gallery Walks ago. And I was like, I don't know if a store like that gonna, and especially opening in midwinter, but I don't know. She's doing fantastic.
Well, and there's so many gems like that. We just did a ribbon cutting. I feel like I talked about it on here. I can't yeah. remember. Juno Woolies.
Oh, yeah.
On Seward Street.
Yeah.
Locally hand-dyed wool. She knows the names of the goats they got the wool from.
I love it.
And we've got passengers that are already coming to Juno on cruise ships this summer that know that's where they want to go when they get into town.
Oh, see, that's so great, because I know for me, like when I go to a small town, I'm always looking for, the first thing I ask a friend of mine that I'm visiting, I'll be like, okay, where's the place, where's the joint that I should go to? Yeah. Not so much like the fancy restaurant, because those exist, but I'm like, where's like the hole in the wall, like really good food, like something unique to that town that you may not get anywhere else.
Which a similar shop, if you haven't been down to the leather store that's downtown right by
Drop.
Oh,
I did go to the leather store.
They have amazing stuff in there. It's worth a trip for others that haven't gone and checked it out.
Yeah, they just opened up recently mm-hmm. too. And then that other place, that Bauhaus,
yep.
Which was new, which has some really cool items in there. Yeah, it's really nice to see sort of the – and I think you have – I don't know. I'm not a business person, but I feel like you have to specialize – and in these days to really make a go of it. Like you have to have something that is unique and that has a niche and that you're not competing with a bunch of other people. Like you go, oh, I need a leather good. I'm going to go to the leather store. I need a wool thing. I'm going to go to Juno Wool. I'm going to get my take that way, you know?
Yeah.
Especially with the loss of like Joanne, like the big, yep. big, you know, fancy stores and stuff like that. So that way you can shop local. You don't have to mail everything in from the sites we won't mention. Mm-hmm. You know, like you want to shop local if you can.
Right.
Right?
Right. And so that'll be my pitch. You come downtown on Saturday, get your last weekend before the ships are in.
Oh, that is.
Check out all the new shops. And then head on over to the tram, come up to the top of the tram. We're going to have 9 distilleries from around the state, including Amalga Distillery and Alaskan.
Okay.
We'll both be up there. 7 others pouring drinks all night. We've got food from Gold Belt, nice finger food to go. So you're walking around, and we have amazing bucket raffles of local experiences that people can buy tickets. You get to drop them in the buckets you're most interested in. We've got anything from Alaska Airlines tickets to helicopter and glacier trekking. It's just going to be a fun night and a good chance to, again, see what's happening locally. And we're going to get a lot of people out that are going to be tied up for the rest of the summer.
And the Spirits of Alaska, it's been happening how many years has it been going, do you know? off the top of your head?
I know it started before I started this job.
So more than a year.
Yes, more than a year. I'm not sure how many.
No, it's been a long time. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it's been a long time. And it's not just local Juneau distilleries. You have distilleries coming from all around the state.
We do. Fairbanks, Haines, Chilkoot, Ketchikan.
Yeah.
They're from all over. And I'm really excited to taste the difference in what everybody's doing.
Yeah, and again, we're talking about these niche idea, and everybody's mm-hmm. doing their unique take on different distilled, you know, products. And
what I love about these events, it's actually the distillers who are going to be here. So you can go talk to the people that are involved in the craft
and find out
what they do differently.
That's really cool. And so tickets for that are available on JunoChamber.com, or at least a link to where you would get a ticket.
Yeah, and it is super easy. It's right there on the homepage. You go down. It's one simple form. I know there were folks that weren't getting confirmation emails right away. We fixed that problem today. And you just have to show up. We have names at the door, so tell us your name. I do want to remind folks it's a 21 and over event. We will be taking IDs at the bottom of the tram to send folks up. But then once you're up there, just a good time will be had by all.
I'm glad you're doing it at the bottom. Can you imagine how embarrassing that would be to get to the top of the tram and then have to show your ID and then get kicked out?
Yep.
I mean, you make them walk down Mount Roberts on the other side. That would be terrible. And so that is happening this Saturday, April 25th. You can go to JunoChamber.com. And I want to mention quickly before we run out of time here, your luncheons, those are open to the public, right?
They are. You have to register, and there is a fee. A fee is slightly different for members and non-members. But it's worth, again, JunoChamber.com, the calendar and the links to all of our luncheons is right there at the bottom. Tomorrow's is, I think, especially interesting range of interest from Juno in Grand Portage with the new Amalgamine project. They're going to come in and share a bit about what's going on with that project. We do have somewhat limited seating, so you want to make sure that you register ahead of time. We're out at the Old Moose Lodge. And then if I can make just another pitch for public awareness and learning opportunities, really encouraging people that haven't been tracking what's going on with CBJ and the budget process to take a look at that. I mean, there's articles on K2 on Alaska Media First and in the Juneau Independent kind of covering the cuts that the assembly is looking to make. But tonight's assembly meeting will be a really interesting discussion on it. And I encourage folks that are writing letters and thinking about coming out next week to do public testimony to listen tonight. The packet that our assembly members have reviewed is hundreds of pages. So if you don't have time, tuning in and listening to the assembly meeting is a good way to catch up and hear what's going on.
Actually, I'll shout out to the Juneau Independent. I read the article earlier today. There is this big meeting tonight. With the assembly, the finance committee, but the Juneau Independent has links in there. Their article has links to like the long list of 34 things that are the big ones that are on the docket. And of course, you want to be as informed as you can be as we face these cuts. That the Juneau Assembly does not have it easy. This is not going to be easy.
And I'll note tonight's not just a discussion of cuts. There's also going to be a discussion of foregone revenue. And looking at some other revenue generation ideas. And I'd encourage folks that have other ideas on both ends to, again, reach out, submit your written testimony. You know, we're limited to 2 minutes if you come and testify next week, but written testimony can be longer and have your voice heard.
Becca Parks, JunoChamber.com. Thank you so much, Gunachish, for coming in. Break a leg on the Spirits of Alaska this Saturday.
Gunachish, thanks.
That's going to do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. We are Wednesday through Friday right here on KTO. Go to kto.org/JuneauAfternoon for more information. Don't forget to check out the Taylor Dallas Vidic Songwriters on Songwriters episode tomorrow. Gunachish, I'm Boston Christopher with help from Aaron Tripp.